The town of Belton, just south of Kansas City, was built along a railroad. The railroad was so important that there isn't even a town square. The rail line served that purpose. Now Main Street is being renovated along the old rail line. It's dotted with quaint little shops where you can get things like antiques and sweets. But modern-day Belton has grown up around the edges. Walmart, Home Depot, Price Chopper, Menards. People can get what they need. And they don't need to go downtown. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And as Belton tries to step into the future, we're telling the story of how it got where it is now, starting with Richards Gebauer Air Force Base. Between the 1950s and 1990s, airmen and officers came to Belton with the service. It's been 25 years since the base closed down. But KCUR's Laura Ziegler reports that the people who worked there still form a community, and they still remember the annual air shows that drew hundreds of thousands of people to Missouri.
Spectators at these air shows would gasp in awe at the sonic boom of the Thunderbirds, the Blue Angels, the hulking C-130, Hercules transports, and the iconic A-10 fighter planes. A former fighter pilot named Jim Valance led a squadron with the prestigious 442nd Tactical Fighter Wing of the Air Force Reserve Command. He took part in a number of the air shows during his decade at Richards Gebauer.
I think one year we had 600,000 people, but 300,000 was not an unusual show.
But it was unusual to see so many people flocking to what was still a very rural part of the Kansas City area. Richards Gebauer opened in 1941 as the Grandview Airport. The Army Air Forces and the U.S. Navy used the base during World War II, but with the Cold War buildup, the airport was leased by the military for what would become an important active duty unit of the U.S. Air Force. KCUR recently gathered a bunch of Richards Gebauer retirees in a meeting room of Belton's Carnegie Village Senior Living Community. We wanted to hear how being in Belton affected their military experience. 73-year-old Richard Lambert, a former jet engine mechanic, wore his Air Force cap and brought a thick notebook of photos and memorabilia. He says the people in Belton at the time learned about what happened at Richards Gebauer, sometimes in surprising and unwelcome ways.
In 1970, an F-106, 787. It was flying around, had mechanical problems, and the pilot ejected. It landed belly up, but it sat in that farmer's field until it ran out of gas.
Nadine Cavanaugh, a 97-year-old in a bright red jacket with salt and pepper hair that makes her look 20 years younger than she really is, worked in the procurement office for 30 years. She says at first the community was suspicious and confused about how the highly secure installation operated.
And then they finally had Air Force Appreciation Night, and the base furnished all the chicken, and I never served so much chicken in my life. I think that was what really made us liked.
There was more than just chicken for Belton to appreciate about Richards Gebauer. The population of the town more than doubled. Neighborhoods sprung up with off-base housing. Grocery and hardware stores, cleaners, and repair shops opened up. The base had a bowling alley and an officers' club, but Darrell Littler remembers there wasn't much else to do, so he and his friends would go into Kansas City for entertainment.
One of my fondest memories is February 26, 1966, and I think Dick can relate to that. We both went down to the USO Club, and that's where we both, each of us, met our future wives. So that was
a
same night, yes, same night.
As the Soviet threat of the Cold War declined, the active duty Air Force Command at Richards Gebauer was gradually phased out. The A-10s moved to Whiteman Air Force Base in Knob Noster, and the Air Force officially left in 1994.
How are you doing?
Today, there's still a small military presence on what was the base. The occasional uniformed enlistee comes and goes from a commissary that serves the Army Reserves and the Marine Regiment that train here once a month. Nearby, there's a field of sand-colored tanks painted to match the deserts of the Middle East. But much of the old base is now a rail-to-truck intermodal hub and home to the Calvary Bible College. Former Belton Mayor Phil Duncan, himself a retired Missouri Army National Guard, took office a year after the Air Force left.
This name and the base, it'll always be a positive outlook for the community and anybody that moves here to have a great air base here.
Even though Belton still invested in its identity as a military town, the number of retirees is dwindling. Those still here don't see much of each other, but get them together and there's a palpable sense of pride and nostalgia for their shared past.
That was KCUR's Laura Ziegler reporting from Belton. And now here in the studio, we're joined by Rob Powell of the Belton Historical Society. Hi, Rob.
Hi.
So the Air Force Base is obviously a huge part of Belton's past, and that military identity lingers, as Laura just explained. But what else do we need to understand about the forces that have shaped the Belton community?
Well, talking about the base, they did come in the early to mid-1950s gradually. There's a rumor, I was only about 5 or 6 then, so I don't know exactly, but that Harry Truman had a lot to do with getting the base to locate there.
Is that a point of pride?
Sure, yeah. And there was some, as Laura was saying, some confusion and maybe mistrust. I know that in 54, my mom all of a sudden ran outside after this big boom went off over our house, and she looked up and saw 3 jets streaming across and trailing vapors and said, "That can't be good."
Yeah, unsettling.
Yes. But it did, they mentioned the Belton Appreciation Days or Base Appreciation Days, which morphed into the Belton RG, Richards Gabar Community Days, and finally just Belton Community Days. But there's always been a fondness for the base. For me, it was personally very, very good on 2 occasions. One is the fact that when the base came in, like they said, the population doubled. Well, the school system doubled. There were only maybe 30 kids in my class, and when I was in grade school, but by the time I graduated, we had 164 graduates, seniors, and
so it created a larger community
right.
you.
And
the
people coming in were more cosmopolitan. We obviously learned about other parts of the world, and the girls were cuter, and our football team, which went 0-19 for the sophomore and junior years, in our senior year they were basically 0-19 because we'd been bumped up into a better class or a bigger class, I should say. And so we started playing Park Hill and Lee Summit and Fort Osage. And but in our senior year, we finally got it together and we're 6-0. So we got a bigger class, but we also got better football players too.
How did Belton get its start?
Well, first of all, that area was part of the Burn District. That's a whole other topic. But a lot of the residents had left during the Civil War. And they came back. They came back from Independence, Kansas, Texas.
Left after the defeat of the South.
Exactly, exactly. So in the early 1870s, George Wilson and I forget the other fellow's name, but anyway, there are 2 people that came and bought a lot of land in that area because High Blue was a community 2 miles west of where Belton is now, and they realized that the railroad wasn't going to be going through High Blue. There was a new railroad called the Lawrence Pleasant Hill Railway, and was going directly through an area that's a high point in Missouri, and so they bought a lot of land there and started Belton in 1872.
And so the railroad thing is huge.
Yes, yes. In fact, there are 2 railroads, and they competed until they finally merged later in the early 1900s. But the east to west, the west to east version was the Lawrence to Pleasant Hill Railway. The north to south was called the Blair Line. It was gradually morphed into the Frisco Line, but it came from Kansas City, went to Springfield via Clinton.
Do you think that the decline of rail travel in the U.S. overall has had a significant impact on Belton, or has the identity of Belton sort of changed with the times?
Well, I think Belton and a lot of little towns, I don't know, maybe this is controversial, but kind of contributed to the decline in railroads because they did have passenger service until 1966, I think. And into Kansas City. So you could get on the train in Belton and go to Kansas City or to Springfield. But 71 became almost the same time, in the late 50s, became a four-lane highway. And so why jump on the train when you could just take your car into Kansas City?
So you can read on the way?
Well, yeah. In fact, I would love to take the train to Kansas City. In fact, just last month, we took the train to St. Louis rather than driving on I-70.
What is your sense of what defines this place? I know that's a tough question about a place that means a lot to you.
Well, Belton is in the middle here. We used to be a small town, a small farming town, and a lot of people in Belton still look at Belton as a small farming town. But in actual fact, as you heard in the earlier segment, we've got a lot of different, or maybe you even mentioned, a lot of the big box stores, Kohl's and Home Depot and whatnot, on the outskirts. And so there's been a real emphasis on growth. So we're between growth pulling us one way and other people being sentimental about being a farming community. But I think the bottom line is we've got to realize we are a bedroom community for Kansas City. We have people that go in there every day and come back every day. And we have a lot of the good things and the bad things. I mean, it's easy to drive in and see the Royals or see the Chiefs, but it's some of the bad things that are happening. Crime is coming out towards Belton. It's not because of the growth. It's not because that we're a former farming community, but we still can drive a mile or walk a mile from where you live, any place in Belton, and get into farmland. So we're still.
I want to jump in and get back into the historical piece of that, though. We haven't talked about Belton as, at one time, a small town anchoring a rural community.
Right. Well, Belton, by 1900, was the biggest city or town or whatever in Cass County. And I don't know where they stand now. I think they're probably close to the top as still the biggest city in Cass County. But there's always been a change. But you'd mentioned downtown, that nobody has to go to downtown anymore. Well, that's maybe good that we have two major grocery stores, but they're not in walking distance of people who live downtown, which I do, and a lot of older adults like myself do. So we used to have two grocery stores, two drug stores. We had a hardware store, Five and Dime, all on downtown, right on the main street. Now, like you said, we have antiques, which all of us have in our houses, antiques. So we're maybe selling antiques to the antique stores. And things are coming back. My wife and I just recently started a production theater on Main Street. We have some art studio now. We have a dance studio. We have some things coming back, but we still don't have the basic services for people in central Belton.
When you think about the history of Belton, how would you like for that history to carry on into the legacy of whatever kind of future Belton does take on?
Well, as president of the Historical Society, that's kind of our job. We have a great board and a great membership
Can I just interrupt you? Yeah. I guess what I mean by that is is it famous Beltonians, I don't know if that's a word, of the past? Or is it the railroad legacy? What is it that you think is the through line that needs to carry forward?
Well, the Belton's motto is still proud past and a great future. And I might have said that wrong, but the point is we still want to keep part of our past. We have a lot of historical figures. Historical things are happening in Belton practically every day, but we don't emphasize that as much. We're emphasizing more the growth of the community and making sure that we can support with taxes, but with also with community involvement, people taking care of the community.
Rob Powell, president of the Belton Historical Society, thank you so much.
Sure.
Coming up, the tough questions about economic development facing Belton in its newer identity as more and more of a Kansas City suburb. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. I I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. Over the past 20 years, Belton has become a shopping destination for people throughout the area. Some of the big stores in Belton attract not just shoppers, but their dollars, and the projects behind those developments were propelled in part by tax breaks, tax increment financing, or TIFs. At the state level, efforts are underway to limit the use of TIFs. KCUR's Samuel King tells the story of TIFs in Belton, and he asks a pressing question for people who live there. Are tax breaks still needed?
Head south on I-49 from Kansas City, and once you reach Belton, signs for stores like Academy Sports and Outdoors, the Home Depot, and Target loom over the road.
It's totally different than it used to be.
Rita Hobson recently returned to Belton after a few years living in Texas.
Well, basically, we didn't have any of this a few years ago. So it's just built up really fast.
She was one of a steady stream of shoppers coming out of Target earlier this month. Another shopper, Michael Cry, remembers a time in Belton when a shopping trip to a big box store meant crossing county or even state lines.
Maybe the McDonald's was the first thing out here when it came, but all these other shops, nothing was out here then, not at all.
As surprising as it may be now, getting retailers to locate in Belton was a tough sell for decades. That's despite being off a busy highway.
We were an unproven market on the outskirts of Kansas City.
Art Ruiz became head of economic development in Belton in 1998. He soon commissioned a market study to show retailers that Belton would be a good place to put their stores. It found that people from towns like Clinton and Nevada were traveling an hour or more to shop in the Kansas City region. Ruiz thought using tax breaks could help bring those shoppers to Belton.
And we figured we could pull from South Kansas City, being the Bannister Mall was failing. And capture the market that was coming from the south into the city to spend their money before they went over to Overland Park.
Tax increment financing, or TIF, first developed in Missouri in the early 1980s. It allows developers to keep some of the sales or property taxes for a certain period of time, as long as 23 years. That helps them offset some of the costs for projects in blighted or hard-to-develop areas. At the same time, communities often borrow money to pay for infrastructure improvements around the development, with the idea that the increased tax revenue provided by growth will pay for it. In Belton, Mayor Jeff Davis says TIFs have provided more than $33 million in funding.
Sure, that's how we built our roads and all that through all of our new development, is the stormwater, the curbs, all that stuff. Came through TIF.
The TIF process should be a win-win for developers and a community, according to Brandon Buckley with Lane 4 Property Group in Kansas City. The group is involved with a TIF agreement that has spruced up the Cedar Tree Shopping Center, located at I-49 and 58 Highway in Belton.
For us, it was an attractive idea to maybe explore incentives to see, okay, how can we beautify this center? How can we maybe attract a higher-end tenant mix that will therefore benefit the community?
But for years, experts and lawmakers have raised questions about TIFs and whether they are a good deal for taxpayers. They say Missouri law is too loose when it comes to defining blight, meaning money is going where it shouldn't. Republican Senator Andrew Koenig represents parts of St. Louis County.
Actually, if you look in the St. Louis area, a lot of the affluent areas are getting TIFs, and the areas that have more poverty are not getting TIFs.
His bill on TIFs passed the Senate earlier this month. It tightens the definition of blight and adds restrictions on how TIFs can be used for retail developments, so that government services don't miss out on funds. In 2016, Missouri State Auditor Nicole Galloway's office found Belton Schools, city government, the county library, and the Metropolitan Community College District were all shortchanged in tax revenue by a now-expired TIF because of a miscalculation by the Cass County clerk. Galloway says that's not uncommon, and her office is reviewing the use of TIFs statewide.
Oftentimes, there's taxing districts that are layered on top of each other, and so that's difficult to administer from the municipality point of view. We've also found instances where there was not proper planning of how that public money was going to be spent.
Mayor Davis says the problems have been addressed, and as a former coach and principal, he's fine with more restrictions on the practice.
It's a trade-off, but it's like selling your soul, though, you know.
Six TIFs remain on the books in Belton, with two set to come off in the next couple of years. Davis says the TIFs did their job by putting Belton on the economic map. Now he says the city's focus needs to be on other issues, like housing.
KCUR's Samuel King brought us that story. I'm Gina Kaufman in the live studio, now joined by Belton City Manager Alexa Barton and Danny Chevalier, a longtime home builder in Belton. Hi, you two.
Hi, Gina. How are you today?
Good. How are you? How about you, Danny?
Thanks. Hello.
So, Alexa, I want to acknowledge, first of all, that we're not always going to agree in this conversation, and that is okay. I want to start by having each of you state your basic assessment of where things stand in Belton right now from an economic development perspective, and then what needs to happen going forward. City Manager Alexa Barton, we will start with you.
Thank you, Gina. Well, we're very excited with everything that's happening in Belton right now. Our economic development is absolutely booming. Our current economic development director is Carolyn Yatsuk. She's doing a phenomenal job in that position. She's seen us through a lot of progress. You know, we have a lot of new department heads in the city. We've got new public works, planning and building, economic development. And in their short time frame with the city, we are seeing the biggest building boom in the history of the city. So economic development's doing very well. We've seen a retail growth. You know, I've been with the city for about 3 years, and we've seen a large retail growth. That occurred before I came and as I've been here. And so now that we've seen...
And you came from Texas, right?
No.
No, sorry.
No, I'm a Kansas Cityan through and through. Okay, I'm from Raytown originally, and my career has come up through the Kansas City regional area.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. And so we've seen a large boom in the economic development to the point with retail, we believe it's just growing naturally on its own. So we're really looking at diversifying our growth. We are looking in the future at redevelopment, at our housing, to continue being able to service our community.
So Danny Chevalier, what's your take?
Well, I kind of agree with Alexa on about all that. I was really shocked at the amount of growth that Belton took off years ago. I figured it would happen in other surrounding areas that had more housing going on and so forth. But it's always welcome. It looks good here that there definitely is a shortage of housing. You got to have people to support these places.
So talk to me more about that, because we did just hear that a lot of people are saying, you know, the focus now that these stores have popped up should be more on housing.
Well, I agree. And I'm not in that department of the city or anything else. That's why I wanted somebody from the city representative there to answer those questions. I'm not involved in any of that end of the politics or the management, anything of the city, obviously. And I do pay attention to their meetings. They had a pretty good meeting March 26th, I believe it was. They had a housing analysis done, had a lot of answers there.
But what is your sense as a home builder of the housing market in Belton?
It's a little slower sale. It always has been. I know that. I don't have any statistics as to why. But even in the 90s, it was a slow. It comes in spurts. It got real aggressive for a while and then died off. And then the late 90s, a couple subdivisions got really hot and active, and it was fast moving. And then it just kind of goes stagnant again.
So, Alexa, you know, we've heard some about big picture, like what the different forces are acting on Belton. We have not talked in this conversation much about downtown. So tell me a little bit about the downtown renaissance in recent years.
I'm happy to talk about that, Gina, but can we go back to housing for just a minute? Because I actually have a little bit of different information than what Mr. Chevalier has.
Sure.
That'd be great. When we talk about housing, our housing study brought back two major items from it, and that is that our market is looking for market rate housing and or luxury apartments, and in order to meet those needs. And what we found out from the group settings that we had, one of the biggest ones was from our own Belton School District and from some of the administration and the teachers, is that they are looking for a certain bracket of home that Belton is unable to provide. And so we realized that we need to be able to pursue that bracket of housing, and that's exactly what we are doing. The other thing that the study showed was that the main population that we have, we're losing people that are in their 40s and 50s. And the reason we're losing those people is because they don't have that housing bracket to move into next. And so they're dispersing to other communities. So that's why we did the housing study. We're really focusing on that. And the other part that I disagree with Mr. Chevalier on is I've actually did some additional research knowing that I was coming here today and talking with people from Berkshire Hathaway, talking to people from Keller Williams, talking to one of our own councilmen, Ryan Finn, actually, who sells real estate. And when we talk about the turnaround time of real estate, it turnaround is really phenomenal here. And as an example, in Timber Creek, it has anywhere from a 2-day to a 50-day turnaround. So real estate is turning over very quickly. And if you take a look at real estate also in the last 3 years, it has an increased value on an average of a home of that's about 1,700 square feet, that the value just simple 3 years ago was at about $105,000. It's now at $145,000. So real estate has really grown. We've seen a renaissance in our community.
What do you make of a home builder having a different perspective on that?
I think you need to take a look at the level of homes and the number and the quantity. You know, we when we brought in individuals for the developers and the builders for the housing study, one of the we looked at them based upon the number of permits they'd pulled, and they're the larger organizations. And so they're coming in and they're providing more homes, which is able to turn that around. And I think Mr. Chevalier is probably looking at this from his own personal experience, who has pulled one permit in the last year. And so we look forward to him coming in and pulling more, because we want that additional housing, and we welcome him to come in and help us in that endeavor.
Okay, we're going to hear more from Danny in just a moment, but I still would like to know a little bit more about how the downtown renaissance of recent years, or the at least desired downtown renaissance that people are working toward, fits into this bigger picture.
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the areas when I talked with one of your producers yesterday was about how do we explain our renaissance and our Main Street and how it's grown? And I think it's because it's so diversified. We have services on Main Street, but we also have shopping on Main Street. And then we also have eating establishments on Main Street that are well-respected and well thought of. We've got the Tea Room across the street. We've got Taro's. We've got Rich and Riches. We've got Mary's Mountain Cookies on Main Street. All phenomenal locations. You go in anytime, there's a line out the door. They're very well wanted to be attended. Our shopping along Main Street has grown. We've got new shops along there. Our shops that are there are actually expanding and growing. We've got different areas that we've got a dance studio that's expanding into an empty building. And
where does downtown fit into the aspirations of Belton?
We want to remember our history. That, you know, we want to be able to pull
people. So downtown as a repository for history?
It is. You know, our own city museum is right there. Rob was here just a few minutes ago talking about that. He's been a phenomenal part, the PALs have been, and BCPI, that organization, Belton Community Projects, Inc., they've been phenomenal at keeping the museum in place, keeping it open, and then also adding an additional feature there in the theater. And so it draws additional crowds in, because we want people to know what the first 100 years looks like, and we want them to also be part of that next 100 years.
And the next 100 years, as you see it, is in growth along highway exits. Is that right?
Well, we do have that growth along that area, but we want people to join to enjoy every aspect that the city has to offer. So that it's not just about the growth and the retail and being able to eat at the newest restaurant on the corner, whether it's Cracker Barrel or Jose Peppers or whatever that is. They're able to come in and shop in the area. They have two phenomenal grocery stores, but they can also come to Main Street and experience that quaint moment that our ancestry experienced. You know, my grandfather lived in Belton in the 70s and 80s before he passed away in 90. And he loved Belton, and I have that love and cherish of Belton just like he did, because it has so many nuances that people can draw from.
Would you like for Kansas City ultimately to see Belton as another Olathe or Overland Park, as sort of an option that competes with those communities or fills a similar function as those communities?
You know, I'm not sure compete is the right word for that. I think we look at each other and we each bring a nuance to the city. Belton, we have so much to offer through our economic development that we've got with North Point Development, with the Southview Commerce Center.
Explain what that is for Kansas City listeners who aren't familiar.
Thank you so much. Southview Commerce Center was Southview was a former golf course. It was over about 150 acres. And North Point Development is coming in and they're building a flex commercial area. And flex commercial is where you'll see industrial type jobs come, we'll see, and it's called flex because there's some commercial, there's some distribution, there's some administrative, and they're coming in and they'll be building large buildings that will bring jobs to the community. They'll have two buildings completed. The estimated time frame is by the end of the year. One is about 250,000 square feet and will house anywhere from 4 to 6 businesses. There's another building that's 650,000 square feet, that's 15 acres under one roof, that will hold just one company. And so we're hoping to be able to announce that very soon through North Point. But it will bring multiple jobs to our area. And that is huge to Belton, because not only will do we have the retail and the eating establishments and the service establishments, but now we'll have jobs into the area so that we're no longer that bedroom community to Kansas City. People can do everything right in Belton. And it includes the amenities that we have. Our parks are phenomenal. Our new park director, Brian Wellborn, and our park board led by Terry Ward, they are just doing a great job at providing special amenities, features, and events.
But I guess my question is, what is the what is your hoped identity for Belton? Like, what do you see? How do you see it fitting into the greater Kansas City metro?
We already have our own identity. I don't worry about that. What we need to do is we need to market ourselves. That came from our own housing study.
Market yourselves as?
As Belton, a community that where you can come. I hate this old adage, but live, work, and play. And we are the same as those other communities that you talked about. They have their own services and identity to themselves. Belton has the identity of having history. We have a proud past. We were built around the base. However, we have an extremely bright future by bringing additional jobs and development to the community.
Let's talk again with Danny Chevalier. Danny, what's your response to what you're hearing? Is it the reality that you're living in?
Yeah, I believe it is. No, I'm all for growth that Belton is providing right now and going with. And it's a good day for them. I'm all for development and growth.
Can you talk to me about your perception as a home builder and also landowner along one of an anticipated development near a highway exit? Can you tell me your perspective a little bit?
Back on the home building, yes, I have only pulled one permit in Belton. There's very few buildable lots, for one. And two, I have not, I don't have any information on any of those meetings and so forth. Alexa said it basically, they go after the bigger, the mega builders, a lot bigger builders. The people that were the backbone of getting Belton on the map seem to be passed over. I don't know how many Belton builders actually have a Belton address that I know of a few, but. No, I've only pulled one permit in Belton in the last year. I'm pulling permits in other cities and building houses, but I seem to not make the list on the any of the. I was turned away, actually, from one meeting. I came a little late, and they were having a review, and one of the staff members said it was for staff, so I left.
So I guess, do I understand right that there are developments taking place that are relevant to you, and you've come to meetings and not felt like you were really welcome?
It really wasn't a development. It was just a like concept meeting and so forth that were set.
And this is for the North Scott Corridor development, right?
Yeah, I missed out on that too.
Alexa, can you explain what we're talking about here?
Yes, I can. Danny, I'm so sorry when you came. The meeting was actually open. He was welcome to come in and listen. Those meetings were set. The meeting that he wanted to attend was actually for the city council, and it was posted. The door was open. He was welcome to come in. Comments were going to be limited based upon our consultant being able to ask questions from an elected official standpoint. We always welcome Danny in anytime. He's been into City Hall numerous times. And as for not being involved in the North Scott Corridor meetings, we actually had public meetings and have pictures of Danny at the table in those public meetings. So I don't know if he just doesn't recall that, but definitely all those meetings are always open to anyone in the community, whether they're a hometown builder or whether they're a large builder.
Stepping back from that tension mm-hmm. for a moment, I wonder if there is. I mean, you have said that there isn't, but if there is a tension between these developments, essentially suburban developments, and that downtown renaissance we mentioned a while mm-hmm. back, can you prioritize both? Or from a standpoint of resources and funding, is there a push and pull?
Well, it's not a matter of funding and resources. We look at every aspect that we can and assist where we can. We understand that anywhere from 60% to 80% of our growth comes from existing businesses and existing owners. And so when we take a look at, we definitely want to help local businesses to be able to redevelop and grow and expand. In the situation of builders, we have a number of housing subdivisions that are growing right now that have lots available, and that is between a builder and the owner of that development to be able to come in and purchase a lot and be able to build on it. And so there are numerous areas. There's Emerson Park, there's Traditions, there's Meadow Creek, there's Plateau, there's Autumn Woods, there's Eagles Landing. I mean, they're infilling all their lots. Any builder can come in and purchase from them and be able to build. And the city doesn't have a dog in that fight, so to speak. That's between the developers and the builders. And so, but we encourage them to do that because there's a lot of subdivisions that have infilling available because the infrastructure is already in place.
I want to bring in Sally Smith of Whistle Stop Antiques. Sally, you've had your business downtown on Main Street for what, 9 years now?
It'll be 9 years on July 1st of this year.
How's that been going?
It's been going well. I have... I started out with about 2,600 square feet, and 5 years ago I gained an additional probably 2,500 feet, and 3 weeks ago I expanded one more time. So I have kept growing. I am finished now, so I've got...
You will not get any bigger.
No, no, but, no. I am bound by brick walls on both sides now. So,
what have you seen as far as change on Main Street goes and change downtown?
At this point, there are many more filled spaces than there were when I first got here. We've got a very active downtown. Alexa mentioned earlier about all the different things that are here. We also, in addition to what she named, we have our city offices on Main Street and a very active Chamber of Commerce here also.
So do you talk to other business owners about just like what's going on downtown and stuff like that?
A little bit, especially some of the other retail and restaurant, yes.
Tell me about that conversation. Let me be a fly on the wall. What kinds of stuff do people say?
Lately, we're all talking about how busy we are.
Well, that's good.
That's good, yes.
Where is most of that business coming from? Is it locals or people stopping by or what?
All different walks. I had somebody in either yesterday or day before who is a Belton resident and has been for several years but had never been downtown. Our license bureau is also here, and so we get lots of... I am fortunate enough to be two doors down from the license bureau, so I get lots of traffic through there. People that did not know downtown was here until they had to get Siri to guide them in, you know, to get to the license bureau. So I think a lot of people think that 58 Highway is our main street.
And I want to jump in, Sally, and ask you, you know, you live in Belton now, but you were actually, until about a year ago, operating your business in downtown Belton from outside of Belton. What inspired you to make that move?
I lost my husband and sold my home, and my mom has been here for quite a few years, so I am now caregiving for her, and it was just a choice. I now feel very ingrained in the community. I have purchased one of the buildings that my shop is in, and have no reason to leave Belton, so I wanted to make sure I lived here too.
So what do you think, as a new resident of Belton and a fairly recent business owner in Belton, that the rest of Kansas City maybe doesn't know about Belton and should?
That we have a very, especially the downtown area, has a diverse offering for people. You can come down here and spend the day. You can get your dog groomed, see a lawyer, get your hair cut.
Yeah.
Eat several times.
Sally.
Kinds of places.
So. Sally Smith, thank you so much for your time today. Sally runs Whistle Stop Antiques, and we've also talked with Alexa Barton and Danny Chevalier. In just a minute, how Belton's growing Latino community sees the town and its future. That's next. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're talking about Belton, Missouri, a town or suburb, depending on your point of view, just south of Kansas City. Belton is becoming more diverse, and the growing Latino population is a big part of that. KCUR's Laura Ziegler reports.
Jesus and Yenny Gonzalez's two daughters have just gotten off the school bus and are galloping up to their front door. The older of the two grade schoolers puts her key in the door to open it. Her sister shares their names.
Brianna, and her name is Evelyn, but she calls herself Evelyn.
The house sits on the corner of a tidy residential neighborhood of modest homes with two-car garages and well-tended yards. The steps into the Gonzalez's home are covered by a ramp. That's because the girl's grandmother, Maria Arona, lives with them. After a stroke a couple of years ago, Jesus brought her to Belton, where he and Yenny could care for her. Yenny says it's common in Mexico for children to take in their aging parents. Her mother, Juanita Becerra, lives with them too. She's at the counter right now peeling large shrimp. The oldest daughter, Kayla Gonzalez, is sautéing peppers and onions for a deliciously pungent camarones ranchero. Kayla's long black hair tumbles over a red pullover hoodie. I say I'm doing a story about Belton's growing Latino community. She gives me an expression of adolescent skepticism, kind of an okay, whatever look, and says she's got friends of all races and ethnicities, but obviously she's proud to be Latina.
I mean, that's where I come from. I was born here in America, but at least I have something from a different country. It's cool.
In her 14 years, Kayla's already lived in Phoenix, St. Louis, and Dayton. Jesus is an active duty Marine, and he gets transferred every few years. He says adapting to differences has been a necessity for his family.
Different type of backgrounds and beliefs, and not just with color, but with different states. You know, Texans are different from Californians. Californians are different from South Dakotans. South Dakotans are different from Arizona. You know what I mean?
Jesus has a big personality. He's warm and an extrovert. He comes to dinner late because he's been helping his neighbor cut down a huge dead tree. Jesus sees Belton as a welcoming town, but he knows his experience may be different than others. He's lived all over the country. He fought in Iraq. He knows how to deal with authority. Many other Latinos in Belton live in a part of town often referred to as Little Mexico, or in one of the several trailer parks. Many are recent immigrants, some of them undocumented. Jesus guesses they've had different experiences, even faced hostility.
I'm going to tell you something, and I'm going to try to keep direct comments to myself, but I'm going to tell you something about me. I was an undocumented Mexican that was brought here when I was 3 years old. I got a green card, what they call an alien card, when I was about 8 or 9 years old, okay? I got my citizenship at 25, so I can go back and reverse the question and say, am I a problem?
But you're not undocumented now.
No, but I mean, I was. I think the majority of America does not understand what the process is in order to become legal in this country.
Behind us, Yenny is deep frying mujera, a whole fish the kids love. She can't find this fish in Belton, so she went to Kansas City to get it for their Friday night supper. She says every time they come to a new community, they try and find the Latino community, including when they move to Belton.
At first, when we got here, we didn't see too many faces, but I go to the store, nobody look at me like different, so everybody has been nice to me.
She shops here at Walmart a couple of times a week. There don't appear to be a lot of Latinos, but that doesn't bother her.
Sometimes when I come to the store, I just come and walk through the aisles, like window shopping.
She pulls avocados and limes from produce bins. From the refrigerator cases, she gets queso chihuahua and panela. She slows down near the dried fruit and grabs a bag of yogurt-covered raisins.
My kids are always like, well, you don't have no sweets at home.
As we pass the menudo, it reminds Yenny that when they were in Ohio, their son Andreas took some of the leftover meal to school.
They start making fun of him. Like, ew, what is that? And he stopped taking lunch when he was like 7 or 8.
Yenny will often go across town to Lupita's, a Mexican cafe and market on Norscott Avenue, to find what she can't find at Walmart, like flat, raw cinnamon for tea. It's different than the round ones in American stores.
Just boil the water and put the cinnamon, and you get cinnamon tea, and you just put sugar in it. It's really good.
There's a small restaurant at the front of the shop. The family likes to come here on Sundays for tacos and tamales. Romero Tristan is the manager.
A lot of Latinos came to our store
to send the money to the families on the on their country, and they came to change personal checks, cash the checks, yes.
Belton is a friendly town, he says. Nearly half of the people who come in to eat at his place are not Latino, including policemen and firemen.
I say we are very welcome on Belton. They're really so nice with us.
It's hard to find detailed accounts of the history of the Latino community here, but around the turn of the century, Mexican immigrants migrated and settled in the Kansas City area to work on the burgeoning rail lines, including two that ran through Belton. But in the last couple of decades, the Latino population has grown here dramatically. An increasing number have come in recent years as part of the immigrant diaspora from Mexico and Central America, but the majority have been in Belton much longer. Like Alicia and Miguel, they've been here for more than 20 years. We're not using their real names because they've had some conflicts in the community. Even though they've got green cards, they struggle to call Belton home.
We can say it's welcome because some people accept us and some people not. So how do we confuse?
When they first came to Belton, they lived in that neighborhood many refer to as Little Mexico. Now they live in a block where they're the only Latinos. In the 18 years they've been on this block, they say no one else has befriended them.
We still having trouble to find nice people around us.
Jesus Gonzalez joins his young daughters for lunch in the cafeteria of Scott Elementary School whenever he can get away from work. It was pajama day, so second grader Brianna greeted her dad in soft pink footies. Her face lit up as he opened her sausage and egg sandwich and tells her he brought her a surprise.
Brought you a hug.
And a little apple pie. The number of Latino students here in the Belton schools has more than quadrupled since 2000, and the district says it's making a concerted effort to accommodate them. It's established this welcome center to provide services for the community. Teresa Balboa, the bilingual coordinator for the district, shares the office with Patricia Benavides, who's with the Guadalupe Center, a social service agency. Balboa says many Latino parents don't know the services they're entitled to and also tend to lay low and not make waves.
I've not had one parent ever come to me and say, I see that my child is falling behind, is struggling, but they never ask, may my child be tested for special education?
About 18% of Belton students are in English as a second language classes, and the number's growing. It frustrates Balboa that district officials can be less than helpful sometimes to Spanish-speaking parents.
They may speak some broken, like sick Danny. If they call and say sick Danny, you pretty much have a good idea that Danny's sick. But this is an older community, and I think a lot of people have been here in this community a long time, and they're not always willing to help them.
Balboa is Anglo, married to a Mexican man who settled in Belton 14 years ago. Benavides is from Ecuador and came to Belton with her husband, a longtime resident. She says they understand the needs of this community and are available days, nights, even weekends.
For instance, we help them with food stamps, Medicaid, we schedule doctor's appointments, pay utility bills when they lost jobs and they can make it, because we are like a family.
Benavides says there was a time a few years ago when they would get calls that police were waiting near St. Sabina Parish Church or on street corners, seemingly to pick up undocumented immigrants. But advocates talked with police, and now it seems that things are better.
We used to have a lot of phone calls from the wives or the husbands, kids, saying that, you know, parents, they were arrested and they were taken to immigration. But I remember we tried to talk to the police, and things lately, maybe a couple years ago, I haven't heard any of those issues.
That was a rumor. We have more than enough things to do. We do not hang out in the parking lots. We are not intentionally looking for minority drivers of any kind.
Belton Police Chief James Person, a lifelong resident of the community, acknowledges that Belton has experienced what he calls growing pains as their once rural community diversifies. But he says he's bound by state and federal law.
If a Latina driving without a valid driver's license is stopped for a taillight violation, they will be arrested for driving without a license, sent through the verification process. If they don't have any documentation, we will notify ICE before they are released, and then it's up to ICE whether or not they have a detainer put on them or not.
Here's the thing about Belton. It's the kind of place where generations of families come back to live close to one another. The changing face of this place is creating some unease, even some fear. On a Saturday evening in March, Jesus and Yenny Gonzalez join big crowds arriving at St. Sabina Parish Church. A Salvadoran priest is celebrating Mass in memory of the assassination of St. Oscar Romero, the human rights icon of the brutal Salvadoran Civil War.
Monseñor Romero no se le conocía.
Church business manager Chris Larkey says Belton has Salvadoran immigrants who fled that civil war and more who've come in recent years. She says this is the 12th commemoration of Oscar Romero.
This is the first year we've been able to celebrate him as a saint because he was canonized on October 14th of 2018. So our whole community is very excited that we now can celebrate him as a saint.
Saint Oscar Romero gave his life for the cause of dignity and human rights. It may be a cause that resonates more than ever in Belton, Missouri today.
That was KCUR's Laura Ziegler. Laura's visits to Belton and the conversations they inspired are part of an ongoing project at KCUR called Here to Listen. If you think your community ought to be better understood throughout the metro, let us know, kcur.org/here to listen. Central Standard is produced by Melody Rowell with Coy Duggar, Chris Young, Suzanne Hogan, and intern Salisa Kalakal. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. I'm Gina Kaufman.